It's Light the Tower.
Say goodnight to this one.
Your daily look around the world of sports with Horns 24/7 insider Jeff Howe on your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Number two, Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Jeff Howe, Snoop Daniel. We know where Craig is. Craig's in Omaha, getting ready to call an elimination game. Texas and Tennessee, 12:45 pregame, 1 o'clock first pitch here on the Horn. But we are not alone for the remainder of the show. We're going to take you up to 12:40-ish before we throw it to Craig and Roger on the call. And with us until then, it's a Shirts and Skins minus the Skins collaboration with Light the Tower. Chad Hastings riding shotgun with me for a little bit. Chad, good to see you, sir.
Good to see you. How are you, my brother?
I'm awesome. How was the vacation?
It was good. Good. Right amount of nothing. That's what I strive for. I try to bathe in the boring as much as I can.
There you go.
I got up in the morning and I did old man walks. We bowled.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
We bowled, which if you're not bowling in Conroe, you're really not enjoying Conroe.
True. Thriving metropolis.
Spent a little time on Lake Conroe.
Did you fish at all?
No fishing.
No fishing?
No fishing. There was drinking. While someone else worked the boat, that was awesome.
Well, I mean, the only reason to fish is to drink, so you basically got the point of it.
I got the point of that, yes. My brother-in-law is retired Navy, so he was excited about, captaining the vessel, and I was excited about drinking on the vessel.
There you go.
So I drank on the vessel. He moved us around the lake a little bit, and then they poured me back into a car. It was fantastic.
I love the lake. You know, when I was a kid, that was pretty much the only summer enjoyment we could afford sometimes, was just, you know, pile in the car and go to Lake Georgetown, and they charge you, what, like probably $2?
Yeah.
$2 a car load at the time.
Lakes are really unique to me because when I grew up, every summer was essentially, not West Texas, but we would go out to Cisco,
yeah,
which is where my grandparents were, and they're farmers, and that's, we went out and helped them farm,
mm-hmm,
through the whole summer. So a big lake wasn't really a part of my summers. So when I see them now, it's pretty amazing. At one point last week, I looked to my left, and I looked to my right, and I looked behind us, and I didn't see one other boat. Just a nice, you know,
yeah,
day out. And it was a still day, calm day, pretty flat water. And it was just cool, man, to be cruising on the lake. So I had a good time. I appreciate you asking.
You ever get into that weird debate, Chad, because you've been to Cisco, so you're a good person to ask. You ever get into that weird debate with somebody on what constitutes being in West Texas and what doesn't?
A little bit, because I'm a little uncomfortable calling Cisco West Texas. It's west of here. It's west of Dallas. But when I think of West Texas, I think of Lubbock, Amarillo, out there. Like is San Angelo West? Okay. Where does San Angelo fit in?
Technically, if you want to get technical, like I use high school football regions across the state just because I'm nerdy like that. It's technically the Concho Valley is where what San Angelo is. It's kind of its own little niche area. But like when Texas was recruiting James Washington, who went on to Oklahoma State with the Steelers back in the day, he's from Stanford. And I said Stanford is in West Texas. You would have thought I was wearing like a Vote for Hitler t-shirt or something. Like,
so what is it for the people that really get mad about it? What's their borderline?
Yeah, pretty. See, I don't know.
Is Abilene West Texas?
It feels like the closest anybody can agree on is like pretty much anything west of Snyder.
Okay.
Is going to be West Texas.
Now, I could probably go there. Because, like, when we would hang in Cisco, the obvious big city that was even close is Abilene.
Okay.
But even when we go to Abilene, I never thought I was in West Texas.
Right, okay.
I was in Abilene. And that's how I tell people where it is. Hey, where are you going for the summer? Oh, we're going about 50 miles east of Abilene. But I never said I was going to West Texas. I don't consider it quite that.
I think Snyder, to me, is kind of the cutoff, I guess.
Okay.
So
I got you.
One of those hard lessons I've learned. All right. So we've got Texas baseball to talk about. We've got Texas football to talk about. We do have a Longhorn Notebook coming up at the bottom of the hour where I'm not going to get on to CB. I'm just going to make a suggestion. It is 74 days until kickoff, and somebody was left out of his montage today.
Oh, really?
That I think needs to go in it.
Okay.
So,
fair enough.
We'll get to that coming up here at the bottom of the hour. But, Chad, your overall thoughts as you've watched this College World Series, you watched Texas on Sunday night, and for me, I said this in the first hour, it boils down to, we can talk about Antico setting the table and, you know, Tristan Stevens. I just kind of expect him to do what he's done all year. And if he can get Kennedy going at the bottom of the lineup, great. But if you don't get it from 3, 4, and 5, if Zubia, Melendez, and Williams are MIA in this game, Texas is probably coming home at the end of the day.
I think that's fair. I mean, those are, you know, those have been their big bats, their big moments. You know, Cam Williams can have that up and down quality to him. Sometimes it hasn't felt as consistent as it needs to. And then, yeah, those other two guys, and they almost helped the comeback the other day. Obviously, Melendez with that incredible at bat, you know, getting on base. But yeah, they've got to me, this team is, they've been really good once, like the very beginning had a little bit of, wait, is there some issue with Texas pitching? We realized, no, Texas pitching is fine.
Yeah.
But then there was those issues about taking good at-bats, good patient at-bats, play small when you need to play small, play big when you need to play big. You know, when you need to bring out the hammer, you got the hammer. But when you need the chisel, you know, you know when to do. So it's just felt like their timing's been off. It's been so long since they had to play a real baseball game. They've just been stepping on people.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the regional, the super regional, like those games aren't close.
They trailed for all of a half an inning in the postseason coming to Omaha.
And they didn't win 3-2. Yeah. You know, they were winning big. And so we referred to it different ways. But, at one point I called it a grooved road to Omaha. But once you're in Omaha, now it's almost like you got to reset your brain. They got pulled into just, I mean, that's just a badass pitching performance on the other side. It's not like Texas was bad pitching wise.
No, Madden was great.
I mean, they you know, got to get used to the stadium. I hear Craig and others talking about how that shadow thing is pretty legit and crazy at the new stadium. If you know your history on Rosenblatt versus this stadium, there are those that believe this stadium is just flat out set wrong.
It
faces the wrong direction.
The locals will tell you that.
The locals would tell you, like, well, wait a minute, that's not where that should be. And so, like, they constructed it. What's the story? They constructed it so you'd get a view of, is it the zoo or the
It's kind of just
downtown
you
area.
Downtown. Yeah.
So, yeah, there are those that know Omaha that would tell you that it was sort of set up in a weird way and you got to deal with certain things. So hopefully they've gotten used to that part. And, you know, now we'll find out. It's wild that the number 2 overall seed and the number 3 overall seed, somebody's going home.
It's going to be a really good baseball team going home after today.
One's already gone. Arizona, they lost 14-5 yesterday, and that was closer than it looked like it was going to be. Mm-hmm. Stanford really jumped out on them. They were the 5 overall seed, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So you got 1 and 5 gone, and now you got 2 and 3 are going to battle, and somebody, a UT, will go home. Texas obviously hopes it's that bright orange instead of theirs. And then, you know, you kind of go on from there. So, yeah, a really good team is going home. And then on the other side, of course, you got this NC State story that took another bizarre, like, historic turn. What they're doing is amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Especially, Vanderbilt was, I think, kind of the favorite coming in. I mean, Texas was the highest remaining national seed, but Vanderbilt, especially, you know, that's the thing with Vanderbilt. Like, I know we talked about Leiter and Rocker all year because they're going to be the first 5, 6 players taken in the draft next month. But what does their staff look like after that? Like, when you can get deep into that Vandy staff and they've got to go to starting arm number 3,
mm-hmm.
arm number 4. Now, what does it look like at that point? If you can get Vanderbilt, keep them out of the winner's bracket, you're going to have a much better chance of getting them out of the deal.
Yeah, that was huge. And now for, what is it, NC State's the first team, or first team maybe in forever, to beat overall number 1, took Arkansas out, and beat the defending national champions. Plus, I'm reading an article today, they beat, like, the SEC pitcher of the year with Arkansas. They mm-hmm. took out the Pac-12 pitcher of the year along the way. And then last night they take out Leiter and the defending national champs. And you didn't just beat Vanderbilt. You beat Vanderbilt when Leiter struck out 15.
That's amazing.
And you beat them 1-0.
Yeah.
You beat them because you got one pitch. And the guy says, hey, man, I was looking for that fastball. And it was an 0-1 count, I think. I think he threw the a first pitch strike. And he took an 0-1 pitch, I think it was, that he fought out to right center. So that's it. I mean, that was an amazing, you know, amazing play. So what we've seen, I think, so far in Omaha, Jeff, is this is not the, you know, the gorilla ball, what's wrong with these bats, 16, 14 kind of college baseball. This is your granddad's baseball games here. And you're going to have to win the moments. And the people like, you know, Kevin Dunn on the triple option, who follows Texas baseball closely, the thing he's been saying all season long, you can feel it, is there's going to be moments where they've got to do the little things. And do I trust the nuts and bolts? Do I trust everything to fit together? It feels like that kind of Omaha. We've seen Texas teams handle those nuts and bolts in the past. Can this team do it? Can they handle all the little stuff? Because it feels like this version is going to require a lot of little things.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that, like, Augie's 14 team, the 14 team that was an extra innings loss to Vanderbilt away from playing for a championship. That team was not as talented as this team is. This team is more talented than the 14 team. But that team did once they really got it figured out, and they, you know, that team had to go through their bumps. I mean, people forget they got that far into the deal and did it pretty much without Dylan Peters for like the second half of the season. Because I think he had Tommy John or something. I forget what he had, but he had a health issue that prevented him from playing in the postseason. But it's just, you're going to need different guys to step up. Like that team, you got a couple of postseason outings from Chad Hollingsworth where he was just out of his mind pitching. He pitched the elimination game against A&M and then pitched, I think it was the second Irvine game, the second Irvine game in Omaha. It was just friggin' brilliant the entire way. But yeah, this team, I mean, whether it's bunting, base running, some of those little things, even when it's been good, we've still questioned some of those things this year with this team.
I'll tell you a little thing that was big last night for NC State. Did you see that play the third baseman made on the bunt?
No.
So Vanderbilt is just trying to find base runners in this game. Yeah. And they've got a pretty fast runner up at bat, if I'm not mistaken. Guy that gets down the line pretty quick. And he just laid this heavy-ass bunt down the third base line. And it was brilliant because it was riding the line, the chalk line, where the third baseman just knew it as he's running in. Like, I got to try to make a play here. This ain't rolling foul. If I wait, I'm going to look stupid.
Yep.
He comes in and goes bare hand and threw him out by a good step.
Love it.
It was awesome. Just look, and in a 1-0 game, all those things matter. Just all those little moments that somebody makes a badass fielding play like that. So those are the kind of things Texas is going to have. They're going to need all the fielding moments. Tristan Stevens is going to need to be a badass. Tennessee, if you let them, will score runs, all kinds of runs against you. They like to bash. And Texas kind of needs to get rid of this SEC issue they've had during the year. Yeah. They've only handled one SEC team. They have obviously not handled Mississippi State well, and now what you don't want is an 0-1, you know, is the 2-1 barbecue and have those two be SEC teams.
Right.
And have to hear that crap that you heard at the beginning of the year, hear it at the end. You don't want this bookended in terms of SEC stuff.
Yeah.
If you're a Texas fan.
Yeah, you've got the SEC issue, and then when this team has lost, high strikeout numbers, high strikeouts have been a problem.
Right, and that's what happened in those early SEC games, remember, was Texas fans extremely worried about, whoa, that's a lot of strikeouts. Was it 40-something in those three games?
I think it was 47 in Arlington.
Wow. Yeah. And then that just really stands out.
And then you were in the 40s in the Big 12 tournament, too.
But here's what's weird. You tell me, in watching those at-bats,
bunt was the first play of the game, by the way.
Oh, that was the very first play?
Yeah.
Oh, my bad. I thought that was a little later in the game. Thank you for the clarification. So in watching the at-bats for Texas in the Mississippi State game, did you feel like there was a lack of patience? Did you feel like they were getting a little too antsy too early? Because obviously Melendez, by the end of it, had that incredible 10-pitch at-bat. He fought off and fought off. But throughout that game, did you think Texas was being a little too hasty with their at-bats?
I didn't think it was impatience. I thought they were just guessing. I thought they got to a point where, whether it's confidence waning or whatever the problem is, guys were just guessing at some point. And the other adjustment you got to make, you've got to adjust to spin rate guys. You've got to adjust to what they're throwing. Sometimes you got to adjust to the strike zone, too. If you know you're not going to get that borderline call, you probably can't look at a payoff pitch on a 3-2 count if it's borderline.
And you realize that that guy's pitching that well, and you also realize that that catcher is helping him a ton.
Yeah.
Like, you want to know what pitch framing is all about? Go rewatch the Texas at-bats against Mississippi State. That kid was framing.
I didn't feel like it was, you know, being antsy. It just felt like guys, once you get to that point, and it's human nature. It's not anything I don't think Tulo did wrong or anything any David Pierce or anybody did wrong. I just think it's human nature in this game. Once you get to that point where the strikeouts start to pile up and, you know, there's that need to press, I thought guys just guessed. It's almost like they didn't have a plan. There's no focus when you go up there.
Yeah, gotta have that. Every little moment matters. And especially now that you're in the losers bracket, there's no mistakes left.
Gosh, and that's what makes it so tough, Chad, is when you think about getting out of that deal and can you get to a championship series. The great thing about being in the winners bracket, like whoever wins this Mississippi State Virginia game, you're set up great because not only do you have to get beat twice, you get that extra day off.
Right.
You get Thursday off. So that's huge, and you start thinking about Texas. As deep as this pitching staff is, as good as it is, you're probably – and just, again, I think back to 14 where the winner-take-all against Vanderbilt, it basically turned into a bullpen game. You know, like, hey, Parker French can give you a couple innings here, or you know, you need Morgan Cooper to give you a couple here, or whatever the case is. At that point, you're just trying to find innings. Oh, and then, by the way, if you get through that, you still got to go play a championship series.
Yeah, the way it's set up, I've said for years, I love the way baseball sets this up. I love the advantages it gives you if you win. I love the fact that you get to host the host games, regional and super. I love the way that they've structured it now. Used to be a little different in Omaha, but the way they structure it now. I mean, think about NC State. They get an extra day. When you're on the first side of the bracket, they don't play till Friday. They get a Tuesday, a Wednesday, and a Thursday off. And don't have to play until Friday. And then, like you said, tonight's winner gets that extra advantage of we're going to get rested, we're going to get reset, and then you got to come get us twice, whoever you are. And you may have to fight your ass off to get to us, and then you've got to beat us twice.
It's not a good position to be in. You know, there was somebody one time who said the world's a different place for a winner than a loser. I forgot who said that.
Yeah, it was a guy that won a little bit.
Forgot who said that.
I think he won a little. Yeah.
I think I was around him
at
some point.
That's fair. And this is the best example of it, really, is you win that game. The difference between winning and losing one baseball game can really set you up.
Did I ever tell you that's my favorite Augie moment of like me and Augie? It was that 14 year they had just beaten Vanderbilt in the first semifinal to force the winner take all the next day.
Okay.
And I don't know how it ends up this way, but we're in the bowels of TD Ameritrade, and it's me, Augie, and Bob Cole. And don't ask me how it happened. It just ends up, I'm standing there and it's us three.
Now that's the start of a great dinner right there.
And so, you know, Bob said he still got this clip, and Bob asks him, the question starts out, you know, how do you view this game? Is it, you know, do you treat it like just another game? And Augie cuts him off and just says, no. This is not just another game. That's all bull bleep. The world's a different place for a winner than a loser, and we'd rather win. And I'm like, well, that story just wrote itself, did it not?
There it is.
Yeah.
There it is.
Anytime we get to Omaha, I love Augie. And CB reminding us that today, 19 years ago on this date, Texas won the 2002 National Championship.
Oh, is that right?
That's
very cool.
That's where the name of this show was birthed in that moment in Omaha. Jeff Onivero steps on the bag.
And by the way, talk about a team that handled the little things. Holy mackerel.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that have been the team with Omar Quintanilla?
Against Rice.
He made that play against Rice, but he made all kinds of plays like that. That was a 2-1 game, I want to say, that they won.
I think so.
They could make 2-1 feel like 8-0. That's what great baseball teams do, man. They feel so comfortable in close games. That's what this team needs to prove. That, anybody can be comfortable in a 10-3 win. Can you be comfortable if you get dragged into a 3-2 ball game in Omaha?
Yeah.
That's what you got to be able to do.
Yep, so we'll see if Texas can get it done today. Again, 12:45 pregame first pitch just after 1 here on the Horn with Craig Way and Roger Wallace. Craig, fingers crossed, will join us at some point in the 12 o'clock hour before he gets ready to call that one today. Before we hit the break, and we've got a Longhorn Notebook coming up next, I do want to reset kind of the headline of the day. And, Chad, I pull this from the This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things file.
Mm-hmm.
Keith Ron Lee, Texas wide receiver, 2021 signee on campus right now. Arrested over the weekend on assault charges in Bryan. Just based on some of the early feedback, and we're waiting something official from Texas, I just get the feeling like Keith Ron Lee might not be very long for this football program.
Yeah, that's tough, man.
But, you know, you have to, it's a whole different ball of wax, the charge and the incident. You just separate that from the football for a second. It's not like this staff and this program are hurting for numbers at wide receiver. They've got guys, especially you throw however they decide to use Jatavion Sanders, you throw Xavier Worthy into that mix.
Mm-hmm.
For me, and I'm glad you're here because I like to get different points of view to just feel like, okay, am I just railing on this position too much? Because sometimes, I say this all the time, especially for us when it comes to Texas, it's tough sometimes to see the forest through the trees. And are we too tunnel vision? Am I too tunnel vision looking at this team? This wide receiver group just really doesn't do it for me, and it's not because it lacks talent. It's just I think people forget your top four guys, Troy O'Meary, Jake Smith, Jordan Whittington, Joshua Moore, all four of those guys have had serious injuries and or off-field issues during their time.
Yeah.
So if I'm Steve Sarkisian, even though you did, like you turned the page, whatever, the history is what it is. I don't know if you can go in saying, yeah, we can build an offense around Jordan Whittington. We can build a game plan around Jake Smith. I think at this point, those guys have to earn it. So there's just not a lot you can bank on at that receiver position right now.
I think that's probably a fair statement. I think there's a lot of Sarkisian and the new staff that's going to be a big part of it. I really think there's a lot of potential with the receiver group. It's just they've got to get their consistency figured out, like you said, the injuries and all that. But also I think this is where Texas fans want to be able to, middle of the season, go, you know what? Feel pretty good about the receivers. You know why? Because we hired the right coach. That, I think, could be really, really important because when you mentioned Smith and Moore, I just kind of get excited thinking about them because I think there's so much potential there for what they can be. If they stay healthy and Sarkisian is Sarkisian, I think they're going to be fine at receiver.
The question is
this kid you're talking about, is he good enough to overlook something off the field like this? That it's a crass way to look at it, but in the end, is this kid four or five starry enough that Sarkisian's going to have to go, all right, man, we got to wait for this to play out, what really happened? Or is it just somebody you go, you know what? There's your mistake. It's over. Let's move on.
I think first-year head coach, you didn't recruit the kid. You honored the commitment and gave him the scholarship. It's not like the Joshua Moore situation.
Right, okay.
With Tom Herman, where you recruited the kid, you felt like you knew the kid's character. And look, I think at this point, I mean, in terms of what we know to be factual at this point, I think we feel like Tom Herman made the right decision by just giving him the 1 year game suspension and suspended from game action for one season. And then you bring him back for 20 and he's your leading receiver last year. So we'll ultimately see what plays out with that. But as far as, you know, the receiver position goes too, I think the other big question for me is Andre Coleman. It's the Andre Coleman factor. I mean, we heard Tom Herman was heavy handed to the point where if you're heavy handed enough dealing with every aspect of receiver play to where you're getting mad at assistant coaches for offering Garrett Wilson without your approval, you probably being a little too handsy with everything. So does Andre Coleman now actually get to coach that group without the head man looking over his shoulder?
Yeah.
See how all that works. That's all right. Fair. We do have a Longhorn notebook coming back. CB has redeemed himself, and I'll get to all of that. Something that caught my eye this morning. We'll do that when we come back on Light the Tower, on the Horn, live, local, and digital, on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Rolling along hour number two of Light the Tower, and really we're into hour number one of a Light the Tower shirts and skins collaboration. I am here.
Light the shirts.
Snoop Daniel is here. And Chad Hastings.
Light the shirt.
Skin the towers. No, wait, that's not.
That's not
going to work.
We're cool not the Baylor team. Baseball team here, Chad. We're not skinning anything.
Since pregame is 12:45, this is kind of like a shirts and skins, like a halter top or like a belly shirt.
Okay.
I don't do well with those things, but it's like a Ezekiel Elliott at Ohio State.
Yeah. You remember? Did you ever watch WCW back in the day?
A little bit, okay, Jeff.
You remember Chris Jericho had Ralphus as his personal security guard?
That's
and Ralphus would wear the belly shirt? Yeah.
That's more like me. Yeah, that's a little more of my look. But I was always supremely jealous as a kid of the guys that could make the belly shirt look really happen. Those guys that were bringing the abs every single week back in college football and pro, especially college ball. It felt like you could do a little bit more with uniforms and stuff. Those were awesome. Linebackers that would go out there. Like, I don't recall Derrick Brooks having a whole lot of belly fat going on at Florida State.
No, Derrick Brooks had such a badass look because he had the neck extender on the back.
Yeah.
With the kind of the belly shirt and then kind of the tail pad flopping around.
Right. And I can't remember, did he visor it up a little bit?
I think he did, yeah.
Dude, D. Brooks.
What a badass at Florida State that guy was.
God. Yeah, no, he looked awesome. He's one of those he's one of those guys where I'm happy the NFL's now gone back to let's let these guys wear numbers they like. Let's let them wear single digits. Let's let them wear some 10s or 11s or whatever it is.
With your Tampa Bay Bucks, if they would have let him wear 10?
That's the only way you could have made it better.
Yeah.
Like, I love Derrick Brooks forever as a Bucks fan because of obvious reasons, but if you could have put him in the 10, that's the only other way to make it better.
Instead of having to think about 10 and think about Sean King in his brief run as the Bucks starting quarterback.
Seeing that was just rude, what you just did there. You just took me from Derrick Brooks to Sean King. Nothing against Sean King.
No,
but come on.
That's the kind of stuff I'm here for, Chad.
Hey, Sean got him that close to the Super Bowl that one time.
And the Bert Emanuel thing.
Oh, the Bert Emanuel thing. Now you're just being rude and mean.
Well, the Bert Emanuel thing is it's kind of valid because it bleeds into our fun fact of the day. So let's go ahead and get to the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cpdoors.com.
I will say CB did redeem himself on his countdown to kickoff because when I looked at his graphic this morning, he had Doug English. It's a good 74 days away from kickoff. Doug English.
Good one.
Adam Ulatowski, he was an All-American.
Forgot he was 74, yeah.
Taylor Doyle. CB even had Gene DeLance, even though he was only here for, a little over a year?
Okay.
Rafidi Ramai, the current 74.
Mm-hmm.
CB initially released a graphic without Dominique Bustamante. What are you doing, CB?
This really shows the offensive lineman in your soul. The fact that you're going after CB about a 74 montage.
Like if CB got to 88 days and didn't have Cotton Spire, be like, oh, whatever, it's fine. Fayetteville, whatever, doesn't matter.
You're getting squirrely on the 7-4 references.
Yes.
Love
like,
that.
Like tomorrow, I expect Sean Rogers to be featured prominently alongside Jonathan Scott. But yeah, Dominique Bustamante. You know, Chad, if we had known then, and granted, you were down in that part of the state where folks don't like to speak of these days around these parts.
Mm-hmm.
But if we had known then what we knew now about the Texas offensive line and just the trajectory that it went on and the very unsavory trajectory that it went on.
Right.
We'd appreciated those 90s offensive lines a little bit more following this program.
Absolutely.
The Blake Brockermeyers and Dan Neals of the world.
God.
Dominique Bustamante, John Elmore, Ryan Fiebiger, the whole group.
Yeah, go back and watch that Big 12 championship game in 96 and just watch them. There's plenty to watch on that team, but go watch them that day. You want to know why Nebraska lost that game? It's because they went backwards a lot that day.
There's the game from that group that stands out more than any other is actually the one before the A&M game. That was it 51-15
in 96? That was a butt kicker.
If you find the TV copy of that game, there are Dan Neal highlight montages within that game.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, good Lord, that should not be legal on a football field to destroy people on counters and traps the way he did.
Yeah, that was the gut. That is the best gut feel I've ever had for a football game and been the most right. I don't think I've ever been more right than that day because I'd watched both seasons play out. I'm one of the few people that ever could say they were watching Texas and Texas A&M play football at the same time and kind of getting a feel for both. And I told my dad before kickoff, it's going to be a rough day. And he was always just kind of like, oh, come on, man. You're just being overly sarcastic. I was like, no, Dad, let me tell you. It's like, I think Texas is going to wear us out today. And it was one of those where I can't remember at what point of the game he might have walked out or gone to do something else or whatever. But that one I had nailed. Even though there was some, at times there was a little shakiness, I guess, to that Texas 96 team. That Aggie 96 team, wow. Shakiness does not describe it. I had already watched that Aggie team in 96 show what they were going to be. And by the way, it started with some guy named Sarkisian picking them apart. I just knew it was a bad day for the Aggies that day. But back to your point, yes. One of the main reasons why, and that's one of the best performances I've ever watched, Texas against Texas A&M. If you ask me when those, I'll bring up the Chris Sims in 2000 game because I thought Texas eventually wore A&M out. But that took a little while to develop. Took a little while to get going.
Slow burn.
A little bit of a clunky start there. Wasn't nothing clunky about 96. James Brown and that crew flattened A&M, and that offensive line was a big part of it. So you bring up a good point, and sounds like CB realized it and got his 74 thing all fixed up and added Mr. Bustamante for you.
You took L's to a BYU team quarterback by Sark, and a Southwestern Louisiana team quarterback by Jake Delhomme.
That is true. Yep. Southwest, there, on the road.
Why the hell was A&M playing a football game in Lafayette, Louisiana in 1996?
Still do not understand that part of it either. They also lost home games to Colorado and Coy Detmer.
Yep.
They lost a game to Texas Tech where Sammy Morris, I think, ran for 399 yards. At least that's what my heart felt. And I can't remember what other – there may have been another loss in there I'm forgetting. Maybe even
– K-State.
K-State. There it is. Yeah, K-State, and that would have been – oh, God, who's that? Can't remember which K-State team that was.
Like, that wouldn't have been Michael Bishop.
But there's a lot that happened. For Texas fans, that you can take pride in a lot of things if you're a Texas fan. One of the main things I'd tell you to take pride in during that era was just what that 95 game ended up doing. I'm not saying it controlled 96, but there was such an era and aura around Kyle Field at that time of, well, you just don't come in here and beat A&M. You just don't do it. Texas comes in and does it in a bar fight of a football game, and then it just felt like something was so different in 96, and then just tours of teams were coming through in 96 and feeling like they were working the Aggies. It was bizarre, but that Texas O-line, man, they were pushing folks around then. Those two games, 95, get physical, stand up to A&M, 96, just slap the Aggies around for four quarters. Had to feel good for a Texas fan to watch. In Austin, they'd been beaten in Austin pretty badly in a couple cases earlier in that era. I mean, to do what they did in 96 was big time.
94 stands out. That 94 A&M team was pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, we talk about Texas offensive lines. That line that blocked for Ricky Williams doesn't get enough credit. Because we talk about Ricky in the Heisman year and Major coming in as a freshman. Even, you know, Wayne McGarity gets mentioned. And you'll mention maybe Dusty Renfro and some of the things they did on defense. And, you know, it helps your defense when you've got Sean Rogers and Casey Hampton in the middle. And, you know, that's going to help any defense out. But the thing that I think is the most underrated aspect about that 98 team, that was a damn good offensive line.
Oh, yeah.
Russell Gaskamp, Jay Humphrey, Ben Adams, Roger Raisler, Octavius Bishop, Leonard Davis not even in the starting group at that point.
Yeah, and that's so by 98, that's not Dan Neal anymore. Is that right?
Right, that's not Dan Neal.
Okay. That was a hell of a group, though. And that was, I mean, the thing about Ricky, I always talk about how Ricky never got dragged down inside the five. Mm-hmm. But also, if you gave Ricky a little bit of a start, oh, my God. He didn't really need as much. But when those guys would give him the opening, give him the crease, you're right. He's the greatest running backs. You'll convince yourself they did it all by themselves.
Yeah.
Because they're just that great. But that guy plus blocking is why he won the Heisman.
You know the A&M game was his favorite game to play in? I interviewed him a few years, it's been several years now. And we're talking about different rivalries. And he's like, yeah, the A&M game was my favorite game to play in.
That's interesting.
Over the Oklahoma game or the other games he played in.
Being a Cali kid, I guess he was sort of cleansed of, he could really see both of them equally. So if he's from Texas, you think he might lean towards the Aggie game if he'd been like a Oklahoma kid or a Dallas kid. Maybe it would have felt different. That's interesting, though, that he would have picked that one.
I think it helped when his first one was 95.
Yeah, maybe.
Because the OU series, was in a different place.
That's true. Yeah.
In a different place.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, one was a little bit more significant than the other. I wanted to get your take on this, Chad. Maybe this is something we talk about, too, in the second hour when we've got some time. We had a topic this week on the Longhorn Blitz podcast, which, by the way, is available now anywhere you get your podcasts. Just search Horns 24/7, click that follow button. Leave us a 5-star review if you'd be so kind. And you can hear that 7 o'clock tonight here on the Horn.
There you go.
We're talking about on the Blitz this week. How good is the Big 12 this year? Because if you start looking at your analytics-based rankings, you know, FPI, all those type of ranking sets, they really love the Big 12. Analytics love the Big 12 this year, specifically Oklahoma State. And I can't, like, the FPI's got Oklahoma State as a top 10 team going into the year.
Wow.
And I don't quite know why, but we started going around the horn in the Big 12 and thinking about, you know, Baylor's got a lot of guys on offense that have played a lot of football. And if this Jeff Grimes hire works out, you figure Dave Aranda's going to figure out how to be competent on defense. Maybe Baylor takes a step. TCU is basically a consistent Max Duggan away from maybe being able to compete for a conference championship. If Max Duggan plays a little more than half the year like he does against Texas, then TCU is going to be fine. There's a lot of intrigue with Texas Tech. All the transfers they lost, all the transfers they gained. I've been a big Neil Brown fan. I like what West Virginia does. So I started thinking about it, Chad. You know, there's some years where I think maybe we look at the league and maybe knock it down a few notches. And there's some years when we do that and we're wrong. Some years we do that and we're right. But the more I look at this league, I think, you know, I'm not going to say it's the second or third best league in the country, but if you get through this conference schedule with a winning record, I think you could say you had a pretty good year.
I think it's going to be a pretty good conference. And the question that's developing in my mind for a Texas fan right now would be, depending on how it looks, could 9-3 be a successful season?
Oh, to me, that would
in 2021.
To me, that would be exceeding expectations.
Because I've heard some people say they think of Texas more as a 6 or 7. It's going to be more of a dogfight kind of season. And my question would be, if Oklahoma and Iowa State are better than Texas, and then there was another game out there where one of these teams you just mentioned, an Oklahoma State, TCU, because the quarterback thing clicks in or whatever. Yeah. If you lost another one somewhere along the way, but that was it, like my gut would say, if I'm a Texas fan, by the way, if you go 9-3 and you don't go to Jerry World, if you go 9-3 and you don't play for the conference championship, could you still tell yourself that year one of Sark was like, oh no, man, I'd give that a thumbs up? It's just that could you live with the idea that Oklahoma and Iowa State, or maybe it's Oklahoma and another team, or Iowa State and another team, but could you live with the idea that, you know what, this particular year there were two teams better, but it was still a success, and not look at it as, oh my God, we couldn't get there in this Big 12, and end up just ripping your own conference?
No, to me, because last year was the year for that. Last year was the year to break through and get there. Okay. Especially when you look at the Oklahoma game, a game where Lincoln Riley had to bench Spencer Rattler in the first half of that game.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you had working for you last year was the year. And you know, we talked about it, Chad. I talked a lot about it during draft time. Like, this program's inability over the last decade to develop NFL-caliber guys at premium positions, quarterbacks, offensive tackles, edge rushers. You had an NFL guy at each one of those positions last year. And if Sam Ellinger, Sam Cosmi, and Joseph Osai, if they had hit their ceilings as players last year and gotten them, and Tom Herman and that staff had gotten the most out of those guys, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about Sark being the head coach.
Mm.
So that's why, to me, so I think it's kind of hitting that reset button of breaking in a new quarterback. You lose a second-round left tackle. You don't have anybody. You're not going to replace Joseph Osai with one guy. And how many playmakers do you have on defense? On top of the fact that, you know, first-year Texas head coaches typically get off the bad starts. Yeah, to me, if they're 9-3, I'll take that all day, every day, and twice on Sunday.
So 9-3, no Jerry World. You could still call that positive.
Sign me up for it.
Okay, yeah. I got you.
We'll continue the Texas football conversation. Actually, we'll carry it over. I don't know. Chad's here. Maybe we'll talk a little Texas A&M football. Who knows? But we've got about.
Are you trying to get us hurt, Jeff? What are you doing?
Well, you know, it's. I just like to poke the bear, poke the rattlesnake.
Uh-huh. He compared Jatavion Sanders to Ricky Seeley Jones earlier.
Ricky Seals
too.
Jones.
Seals Jones.
Yeah.
Well, now there's a comparison I hadn't thought of.
A little bit of that in there. A little bit of that in him.
I can see it.
But there's not. That's the thing with Sanders. There's not a direct comp. He's such a unique kid. There's not really a direct comp.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. Yeah, let's go. Let's bring him up, because that's a fascinating conversation to me, on which side of the ball or both.
Let's do that after the break when we come back on Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Jeff Howe and Snoop Daniel.
Back here for a couple minutes to close out hour number two, Light the Tower. Jeff Howe, Snoop Daniel, Chad Hastings. We will have more of a traditional shirts and skins. What are we doing, Chad? About a 40-ish minute show.
Belly shirt.
Next hour.
The belly shirt edition.
The belly shirt edition.
Bring your abs today.
I'll just call it the Ralphus edition of shirts and skins.
The Ralphus edition. Bring your abs and crunches.
Do you remember... you remember the deal where, you know, Dean Malenko had the deal? But I swore we weren't going to talk wrestling, but it's me and Chad, so we're going to.
You should never swear that. You should never do that.
Remember the deal where Dean Malenko, his gimmick was like he was the man of 1,000 holds, right? And he's doing the rivalry with Jericho, where Jericho swears he's the man of 1,004 holds.
Yeah.
And he's just reading, like,
and
you know,
read him in the
some
ring?
Ridiculous, and like every other one is armbar. It's like Vernon reverse Schnabitz. It's like Tallahassee weed whacker, armbar. It's like every third one was armbar. It's great.
The reading of the list was great.
Chris Jericho's so good.
So wonderful.
You know what else is good, Chad? Jatavion Sanders. We got a couple minutes here before we close out this hour. You got a thought on Sanders or
okay, so
a preference?
Right now, correct me if I'm wrong, right now the plan is that Jatavion Sanders, if he had the choice, he sees himself as more of a receiver?
They're starting him out on offense.
He sees himself that way. I was raised as a defensive football fan and to appreciate that side of the ball. If I'm looking for impact with that guy, and if that guy is five-star quality level, like if he's just a five-star on offense and he's more of a three-and-a-half-star on defense, that's a different discussion. Mm-hmm. I sense that he's five-star in pretty much whatever he does.
Yeah,
I would want him to impact on defense, and then I would fit him in where I saw it happen on offense. To me, it's about how do you create the biggest impact and how do you create the biggest disruption, and I think it's him getting after the guy trying to throw the ball.
I don't disagree with you at all. I think he's got a first-round type future as an edge guy. But I think you've got to look at this a couple of different ways. Way number one, conceptually, what's easier for him to process and understand that just gets him on the field earlier? Maybe that is offense where you can split him out wide, flex him, do whatever to get him adjusted quicker. And just conceptually, like, how much can a freshman handle? So while I don't disagree with what you're saying, I think it might just be better. Look, try him on offense, see if he can figure it out. If not, then flip him at some point.
Then the defensive thing will be something he can pick up pretty quickly.
I mean, I would think so.
Yeah. I guess my thought would be,
I just think that's a lot for a freshman to say, hey, we're going to try you out on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
Right away, and expect you in a game to be able to do either or.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough one because again, what the kid wants is important, especially when you're that good. You gotta factor that in. But to me, to get in there, be a disruptor, be all, you know, really just wreck the shop on one side of it, and then at certain times in a big moment, he runs out there on the offensive side, and it's like, and you've got safeties and linebackers and corners and DCs freaking
so
out?
Are you thinking more of kind of like what Miles Jack did at UCLA, where there were times where you really didn't know what his primary position was because he played both?
Maybe.
Somebody looking up, well, Jeff, Miles Jack averaged 27 snaps a game on offense and 16 on defense. Well, whatever. He played both very well and split snaps about as equally as a two-way guy can split it.
If I had my choice, I'd rather the opposing quarterback fear him immediately than the opposing defensive back.
I got you. I do think there's this part of it too, Chad. And Rod said this a few years ago, and I really believe it. Rod Babers, by the way, my co-host on the Longhorn Blitz podcast here. Rod is part of that triple option each and every weekday, 3 to 7, with RBKD. Defense does win championships, but points win the Big 12.
True.
So I think maybe that's Sark looking at, look, and at least I think the good thing, too, is with these transfer defensive ends, and we talked about them in the first hour, Ray Thornton, Oviagofu, Ben Davis, at least with those veteran guys for this year, you've got that buffer to be able to really take this year and kind of figure it out. So I do think, though, by the time you get to next spring, you need to have a really good idea. Okay, we tried the offensive thing. If it works, he's staying there, and we're just going to develop him to be the best offensive player he can be. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't work out, you can flip him next spring and just spend spring getting him ready.
And for the record, if he does play offense, is he a tight end or is he a receiver?
I think he's a move guy. Like, I don't think he's going to – I mean, will he play some with his hand on the ground? I mean, we heard the Sark cut earlier. They think he can be a capable, willing blocker. Mm-hmm. But to me, I would just move him around and make him a matchup guy.
God, that'd be incredible.
Yeah.
Be incredible.
Again, a lot of that's going to depend on conceptually what can he handle. But if he can handle it, that's a hell of a mismatch.
I also was raised as someone who appreciates the tight end position.
You love you some tight ends.
So if this dude can help to resurrect a position that's kind of been forgotten around these parts, I do love a well-placed seamer that freaks a defense out, and we got a big train running right down the middle of the field. If that can be Jatavion Sanders, I'll watch that.
Hey, the 2014 Texas offense, Chad, hit 3 NFL tight ends on that offense.
Wow.
I mean, one of them was playing quarterback, but you had 3 NFL tight ends on that offense.
Hey.
Andrew Beck, Jeff Swaim, Tyrone Swoops.
Okay.
I'm only giving you facts.
That is factual information. You're absolutely right.
The light the tower portion of today is done. We'll hear, hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll hear from Craig coming up in the I don't know what we're going to call this, the Ralphus edition of programming today here on the
That Horn. Is the best idea I've heard all day.
Snoop, thank you so much for sticking around for the next 40-ish minutes. Our goal, though, right now, our focus is getting you the Texas-Tennessee pregame, 12:45 pregame, first pitch just after 1 o'clock here on the Horn. We'll take a break and come back, and we'll keep it going. Just a little bit of a different feel to it when we get back. This is like
bring your dachshund and your hound camp. Bow, bow.
If your dog is shedding their winter coat all over your house, then all that fur is getting to you. Camp Bow Wow can help. Camp Bow Wow has just installed a new Prima bathing system. Just one of the perks of treating your best fur friend to a stay at Camp Bow Wow. Your pup can get their zoomies out and play all day long with their fur friends in a huge supervised play yard. And for all that fur, Camp Bow Wow has grooming spots available. Pick up your monthly Camp Bow Wow calendar, jam-packed with fun activities all month. Splash pad, ball pit, beach parties, and more. It's Camp Bow Wow in Hutto. Look for the signs on Limmer Loop just west of the I-30 tollway. More info, campbowwow.com/Hutto. campbowwow.com/Hutto.
At Camp Bow Wow.
You don't have to wait to get a good night's sleep during the Factory Mattress More in Store event. Sleep right now, with same-day pickup or free next-day delivery, setup, and removal. Factory Mattress is the largest locally owned group in Texas. We have more available.